Okay. So, good morning, everyone. Who am I? My name's Mike Salthouse. I'm the head of external affairs at the North Standard. North Standard is a P&I club. It's the UK's largest P&I club. We insure about 20% of world shipping. And then through our partners at the International Group, and I think Nick and Camilla from the Secretariat are here today, we reinsure about 90% of the world's tonnage, I'm sure, as you know. I say 90%. A few years ago, the group would boast that it collectively provided insurance for 95% of the world's tanker fleet. That figure has dropped really quite significantly over the last 2 years, and some of the reasons behind that and some of the consequences, you know, I want to explore later. But moving on, I don't know how many of you were at the opening ceremony yesterday. Was it just a quick show of hands? Were you at the opening ceremony? Who heard? Yeah, good. Okay, because I think we all had the privilege of hearing probably the best introductory speech I've ever heard at one of these events by Lee Hsien Loong, currently the senior minister of Singapore, formerly the prime minister, obviously. And I don't think I've ever heard a better exposition, a better explanation of how the shipping industry has got to where it is, how it has benefited from globalization and the removal of trade barriers, and the challenges that it faces today. And actually, those challenges are really quite scary. They're quite profound. So what I'd like to do really over the next 40 minutes or so with our expert panel is unpick some of the issues that were raised yesterday and understand what they mean for us at a very practical level. So just by way of introduction, although I think probably most of them don't need any introduction at all, but they will get one anyway. We have Nick Oshoes here from representing his capacity as the chairman and president of BIMCO. BIMCO, as you know, it's a membership, owners membership group, and it comprises approximately 60% of the world's ship owners. And you also obviously are a ship owner in your own right, quite an interesting and diverse fleet, which I was looking at just yesterday. Next to him, we have Sotiris Raptis. Sotiris is the Secretary General of the European Community Ship Owners Association. A large block of ship owners and with quite a lot of interest in what's going on in the world. And then next to him, we have Matt Kissin. Matt Kissin is the managing director, the Singapore managing director for the Liberian Registry. And Liberia is the world's largest registry. I think it's something like, 245, 250 million GT on your books. So, you know, you speak with them as your constituency. So what I'd like to do then really is dive straight in. And I think there is no better place probably to start than the developing, maturing, maybe not maturing, relationship between the world's two largest trading blocks as people who facilitate trade. That is of acute interest to us. And we're talking, of course, about China and the United States. And I think the thing I'd like to start with is asking really how the panel expects, and Sotiris, we'll probably start with you, how the panel expects the changing trade relationship between the U.S. And China really to affect shipping. I mean, from your perspective, how do you see that? Looking, I suppose, at the use of tariffs, these are already coming in, and also the thing that's on everybody's minds, which is the United States Trade Representative's ongoing Section 301 investigation, which we're all very interested in seeing how that develops. So, Sotiris, please, if you could start with that.
Thank you, and good morning. Good morning to all. As we speak, the hearing of the U.S. investigation is ongoing, and I would like to start with a short comment on that. We made our submission together with the International Chamber of Shipping yesterday to the U.S. investigation consultation on the proposed remedies. Mm-hmm. And we highlighted in our submission that the potential impact, the potential scope of the proposed remedies will cover around 80% of container ships, 44% of the bulk carriers, and 68% of car carriers. Our point is that we should have a discussion about shipbuilding, and we have seen a shift of debate over the last 5 years to the security side, and part of it is shipbuilding. U.S. shipbuilding in Europe. We have a similar discussion in Europe, how to support European shipbuilding. The real question is how. From our side, we don't oppose this discussion. I mean, we should probably have this discussion, how to support shipbuilding, how to make shipbuilding more competitive in the US, in Europe. Is part of also of the defense discussion. Yes. What we propose in our submission and what we propose from our side as European ship owners to the European policymakers is that we should take a step back and check why Europe and the US lost shipbuilding in the meantime. Is it the lack of advanced technology? Is it the labor costs? And how to become more competitive there? Mm. So from our side, the answer there is a clear answer that we need the Europe and the US need to become more competitive in investing in advanced technologies. Mm-hmm. We've got this challenge of getting to net zero by 2050, which is an immense challenge. It will require immense investments, including in clean tech.
Yeah.
This should be part of this agenda. It's not about bridging the laboring costs. It's an economy of knowledge. And this is also in our submission, ICS's submission.
Yes.
We shouldn't go down to the protectionist pathway. Mm. Instead, invest in our advantages.
Mm. That's interesting, isn't it? Because I think I'm certainly of a certain generation. I've been around probably longer than I care to remember now. But I came into this industry about 30 years ago, and my entire professional career has been about the reduction in trade barriers, free trade, growth of the industry, and actually society at large welcoming globalization, and we've thrived on that, haven't we? But I think with the world has changed, hasn't it, really? And I think that's really came out quite strongly from the speech yesterday, that actually we are in uncharted territories, and the US is, I know from a strategic military point of view, very concerned about the fact that, unlike in World War II, where they were pushing out a Liberty ship, what, one a day? Today, they simply don't have the industrial capacity to do that, and China does. And I think that's behind a lot of this. Matt, maybe just you first. Have you got any perspective from a registry's point of view?
So I think one of the keys is that it's still a developing situation. It'll be interesting to see what are the scope of the measures and what are the final forms. It'll be good for shipping lawyers generally. I think there's going to be a lot of business for them. I think the previous speaker said it well in that while businesses like certainty and predictability, we need to be able at this point to embrace uncertainty. And speaking with different clients over the past couple of weeks, it seems like there's a lot of contingency planning for different scenarios. And I think maybe the contingency planning has been thinking about scenarios which previously would not have been thinkable. And the general theme seems to be, you know, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. So I think the shipping industry as a whole has always been capable, COVID-19 being the most recent example of, one door closes, another one opens. So I think there'll be some opportunities. Obviously, the other shoe is going to have to drop as well. So whatever the eventual policies that come out, you can expect there to be a reaction. But I think global shipping is always resilient, and there will always be a way to find some workarounds, make it work. And trade is not going to stop. Shipping is still going to be important.
Do you know what percentage of your book is Chinese built? Do you have that idea?
It's probably, reflects the global
average.
Yeah,
it must be around about 50%,
yeah, exactly.
I'd probably guess. Yeah. Nico, if we can come to you. I mean, you obviously represent ship owners. That's your job. You are a ship owner. I know BIMCO obviously have also, written a letter on the issue of the USTR. I'd be interested, really, what your perspective is. Just one thought beforehand. My history was in Greece. That was the market I was, as I sort of grew up in P&I, I was most familiar with. So I went out to our Greek ship owners. Sotiris, is maybe something to reflect on as well. I was surprised. Actually, it was quite a muted response initially. I expected, table banging, the usual stuff, but not initially anyway. I don't know whether the views have sort of matured a little bit. But Nico, your ship owner's perspective on this.
Yes. Thank you, Mike, and thank you very much for having us on this panel. And it's good to be in Singapore, because in Germany, we sometimes feel so very opinionated, obsessed about this discussion. And yesterday, the contribution from Minister was really very, very impressive summary of the situation. It was good for me to see how you can look objectively at different interests of the nations. Now, BIMCO has commented very clearly in a letter what we think about USTR, and I had hoped, we called our rep in the US, I had hoped that this morning we could give you an insight of what happened yesterday, but it was a closed shop so far, so we cannot share. But what we can share is our view on what happens if America would adopt this penalization of Chinese build or Chinese parts of a fleet when calling ports. The only party that will be really harmed will be the consumer in the United States. Globally, the exchange with the United States only is about 12%. So the impact on the global fleet will be limited. But of course, for the consumers, it will become substantially more expensive to import products because the ports will concentrate on single port calls, calling the US, so you will have congestion. We'll have, of course, an increase in the cost for the containers as such. Due to the penalization, you will have a split market. Probably some companies will split into two DOC holders, one with the Chinese-built fleet or partly Chinese-built fleet, some with Japanese or Korean-built fleets. Of course, they will take a large premium in bringing products to the U.S. So the container market will suffer substantially. In the local ports, which are used for feedering at the moment by the international carriers, you will lose a lot of jobs. In the end, the tonnage, and I agree, Sotiris, that there may be a valuable discussion about building ships, but this USTR policy will not bring a single order of ships into a United States-based shipyard because it's too expensive. So there will be no effect on that. And finally, there will be a very big effect on exports from the United States, which is grains, soybeans, corn, coal. And those will become substantially more expensive. So in the end, it's a policy which so far we fail to understand how you can do that in the interest of make America great again.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult to see who wins in this, really, isn't it? It's it doesn't really seem, from our perspective, to necessarily benefit U.S. shipbuilding in the way that perhaps it's intended. Tariffs? Any thoughts on tariffs? I mean, that's the other. I don't know, the other sort of highlight headline policy that Trump has introduced seems to be upsetting a lot of people, Canada particularly, but Europe's also twitching nervously. I mean, any from a shipping perspective, do we just say, well, this is a feature of trade, we're largely isolated from that, or do you see that having any sort of particular impact on ship owners, trading, charterers? Maybe Nico, start with you and then move down to Sotiris and Matt.
Well, so far the analysis of what tariffs would imply, and especially not the tariffs but also the retaliation of these tariffs, there are pros and cons for the ton mileage globally. In the end, the proof will be in the pudding, and we don't really know yet what it will imply. Certainly, tariffs will impact the container shipping markets more than the bulk markets, but also bulk markets may be affected both positively and negatively. For example, if Mexico, which is the largest importer of corn from the United States, has to buy these corns from Brazil, it means ton mileage. If China uses the cooking coal, which they import at the moment from the United States, if they use Mongolian coal or Siberian coal as a substitute, it means a very negative impact on mileage. So we don't really have a very clear view yet But we can again only refer to Minister Lee yesterday. The aim of shipping is free trade and lowering tariffs and trying to avoid them, not building them up.
Yeah. And actually, just a thought, I could just encourage you just to bring your microphones a little bit closer, because I think it might be cutting out a little bit. Sotiris, any perspective from European ship owners?
Well, we need to see first
just a bit higher.
The level of the tariffs.
Yes.
For instance, we had a meeting last week with the Trade Commissioner of the EU. We're expecting now a new round of tariffs against the EU.
Mm-hmm.
April, and the EU is preparing retaliation tariffs of around 30 billion euros.
Yeah.
We need to measure what these tariffs are about. We need to see first. We have seen a lot of announcements, mm-hmm. and then delay of the tariffs, and then again, announcement, new delay. So we need to see what will happen at the end. I fully concur with Nico on of the shipbuilding. One interesting point of our submission is that the increased cost if you build ships in the US is four times higher.
Yes.
It's an immense cost. And this will be, all, of course, passed through to the consumers. The reason you didn't, you don't see us banging the table is that, you know, this hasn't started with this administration.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ongoing process.
Yeah, very good
the first
one.
Time we made a submission to the US investigation was last May under the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. We have seen an overall shift to the security side and to repatriating industrial capacity to countries like the US or to the EU. And the thing is that we need to be part of this debate. We shouldn't end up in protectionism. From our side, what we propose is that let's have a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
The real question is how to support your national industry. Is the best way to just give the taxpayers money and subsidies to bridge the labor costs or to invest in clean tech, mm-hmm. which also links you to the overall IMO targets to get net zero by 2050? This is the real question. The question is how to make this happen.
It's interesting, isn't it? And Matt, I don't know if you've got anything to add, but just one observation on that is that if you're being generous, and I think we should be in terms of the interpretation of how Trump's going about things, you would say he's a disruptor, and this is disruptive. But you know, if it does prompt the sorts of conversations that you're having, or that you're the issue on the points that you're raising there, actually, is that necessarily a bad thing. Matt, anything before we move on to the next area, which is our friends in Russia? Any final thoughts on that?
Well, I'm Canadian, so you know, the tariffs that are applied in the past few weeks have changed on a daily basis, right? And you know, to Sotiris' point, you know, in these conferences, whether it's decarbonization or now these issues, we talk about collaboration, discussion. I'm not sure if it's really a discussion. So, you know, I think right now there's a lot of self-interest, and the policy is pro-tariffs.
Mm.
We'll see in terms of the reality how that shakes out and if that's a positive policy for the economy.
Yeah.
But you know, right now discussion is maybe at a low point.
I mean, I one last point on USTR. I suppose we did expect things to have sort of progressed overnight, and perhaps the fact that they haven't means that there is a little bit more consideration of some of the points that you gentlemen have been raising. Nico, I'm going to come to you just on sanctions. We obviously had a chat a little bit beforehand, and we're looking now really at Russia. This is the other big thing that's going on. Obviously, we've had very direct intervention in trade. Russian oil was a significant cargo that was being carried from Russia to Europe. That all changed. But now we're in a position where a lot of us might expect US sanctions on Russia and the carriage of Russian oil to be withdrawn. And query what happens when European Union sanctions, UK sanctions, which certainly I'm subject to, remain in place. Any thoughts on that from the ship owner's perspective?
Yes, thank you. First of all, BIMCO is a non-political organization, so we cannot say anything about the sense or nonsense of sanctions. You are right on the European sanctions. There is no sign of any of them being being lifted, and we face a lot of uncertainty with policy coming from Washington. I personally remain unwilling to believe that the policy coming from Washington is without a larger, some type of plan. It is difficult to imagine that it is almost coincidental or aleatoric or situation-driven what comes from there. So we hope, or I hope, that there is some type of master plan behind finding an agreement on Ukraine in view of relationship to Iran, in view of relationships to China. Looking only at Russia, the U.S., relaxation would not mean a lot for shipping because there has been very little trade between these two nations before the sanctions began. So that will not change with regards to ton mileage requirements. One thing that may change the situation is that if the sanctions are lifted, the Russian oil industry has easier access to spare parts and thereby can increase their oil industry again. That would add a little, but looking at what OPEC is increasing, this will probably not change too much itself. Where we have an impact, of course, is if there is a solution with Russia, it would imply some type of solution with the Ukraine, which would be good for the bike markets, exporting grain from the Ukraine, and also for the LPG markets, exporting ammonia, etc., from Ukraine. And then we could expect that a relaxation with Russia would also imply some type of agreement on Russian support of Iran and diminishing Russian support of Iran would probably have an impact on the Houthis because they are a delegate of the Ayatollahs. So that may be good for a relaxation of the situation in the Red Sea. And what that means for container shipping, we all know. So there are indirect implications for the Russian-American relaxation. But I don't know whether it will come. We are non-political.
It's very difficult, isn't it, to know what's coming. I think I was in a conversation as an excellent forum in Europe, which is essentially insurers and reinsurers, which is headed up by Bob Walsh from AXA, and he brought in a former member of the State Department to talk about this. And first thing that came across was just how almost upset that particular former civil servant was at the way in which, you know, existing relationships were being, I don't know, changed. But then the other point, a response to the point I made was, well, look, even if a large part of the deal that may be done with Russia is the withdrawal of Russian sanctions by the US, what effect will that have? We are indirectly subject to US law as an insurer, but we're not directly subject to US law. We're subject to UK law. And if UK law remains unchanged, we will not be insuring vessels trading in breach of the existing sanctions regime. Why is that important? Well, as I said, we still reinsure 90 or so percent of the world's tonnage. So what can Trump actually deliver, perhaps, on some of the things that he may be promising? Is he aware of these particular subtleties? So, Tyrus, any perspective from the from European ship owners?
We are not a political organization either. We're following the situation very closely with the European Commission, who is in charge of the European sanctions. As you probably know, the Commission proposes to the 27 member states, and the member states decide by unanimity in the European Council. It's not news, it's in the press that on the European side, we haven't seen any signs of backtracking on the sanctions.
No.
It's the opposite. The Commission comes every second month with a new sanctions package. I think the last one was last month, and the whole package of the sanctions is renewed every 6 months. We haven't seen anything on the European side. The concern for us in the meantime is the potential environmental impact of an accident in the Baltic and the North Sea from the Russian shadow fleet. This is something that we have communicated well to the European authorities that they need to take measures. We will communicate our concern, but they need to take measures and decrease the risk of a major environmental accident in the area.
Yeah,
these ships come and go without having proper insurance, for instance.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I'm going to come back to that because I think there's a big issue there. Matt, just before we get there, any perspective really on, I mean, because the registries have actually done quite a lot of work, haven't they, with the Registry Information Sharing Compact in terms of, you don't have much choice. I think you're headquartered in the United States, so you're going to be certainly respecting US sanctions. But I know you've had an engagement with other governments as well. So any thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, not just being U.S.-based, I think U.S. sanctions for everyone that's involved in global trade is a big concern. So first of all, I mean, the sanctions are still there on the U.S. side. They're supposed to be gone in 24 hours, but we're still there. And as a registry, there's been a lot more pressure and focus, in part because of the dark fleet, on the responsibility of registries. So for us, it's U.S. sanctions, EU sanctions, and UK sanctions that we're doing compliance with. We have no dark fleet vessels, so it's not something that we are sponsoring. And as you mentioned, we have the Registry Information Sharing Compact, which is a group of registries. It's a data information sharing tool to avoid flag hopping for ships which might be involved in sanctioned behavior or suspicious behavior. So that's been one way in which we're trying to contribute to maritime safety and the environment, because as Sotiris mentioned, that's the big risk of having these dark fleets going around.
Yeah, interesting. Well, let's get to the shadow fleet then, or parallel fleet, as I think certainly Nico and I prefer to call it. It's a much better description, isn't it? What I want to ask there is sort of picking up on the points you've just been discussing. You know, the consequence of sanctions has been, you know, businesses like ours. Sanctions have been enforced through businesses like ours. You know, I chaired the sanctions committee from 2011 through till 2022 for the international group, and the level of knowledge of states about what we did grew exponentially in that period of time. And because we're very because we take 100% of the risk, because everybody needs liability insurance, or we thought everybody needed liability insurance, you know, we were the sort of vehicle through which sanctions were delivered. But of course, what we've seen is, because these are unilateral, not multilateral sanctions, we've seen a repositioning of quite a significant chunk of shipping so that they no longer access EU G7 coalition services. And they may not access services at all. That's the concern. We don't necessarily know that, but that is the concern. But I'm wondering really, let me just speak for GIGO, because when we were chatting beforehand, and GIGO had the view that actually, as soon as you remove sanctions, this fleet will disappear. Whereas others might have the view, no, we've created something of a monster here, which is not going to go away. And I say a monster because there are, you know, legitimate concerns about whether some of these ships coming through quite sensitive waterways actually have insurance. And that includes, of course, out to this part of the world, because a lot of these cargoes are trading out to Asia. Maybe, Sotiris, you raised it first, so we'll start with you. You didn't hear GIGO speak, unfortunately, but I'm just wondering if you agree with the point that if sanctions go, the fleet will go, or do you think more is needed by governments to correct the monster that has been created? Monster is probably a pejorative term, but you know, certainly we've created something where there are concerns about the quality of insurance, you know, the quality of maintenance, the fact these ships are older, all those objective criteria.
I don't think there is a real answer to this question. Mm-hmm. It's to be seen if the sanctions are lifted at some point in the future. But yeah, the real question why we've got the shadow fleet. Mm-hmm. And part of the answer, I guess, is that the Russians wanted to become less reliant to the European fleet and to the global fleet. The shadow fleet is there. Mm-hmm. The immediate question we need to address is how to deal with the environmental risk, mm-hmm. how to deal with the fact that all the ships come and go in the Baltic and the North Sea, and of course in all other European and international waters without proper insurance. What will happen in case of a major environmental accident? We've got accidents of less importance here and there. There are organizations reporting on them. But what will happen if we have a major accident? Mm-hmm. Who will clean up the area? And how can we avert an accident of this scale in the area? This is a real question. And we're working closely with the European authorities. Mm-hmm. We have seen different initiatives over the last couple of months. One of the initiatives the Commission has undertaken is to strengthen the regime of inspections of the ships crossing the Baltic and the North Sea and check whether they carry proper insurance. The process is ongoing, of course, but time is of essence there. I think that we should probably focus more at that moment how to address the mm-hmm. immediate risks. And, yeah, of course, we can discuss about what will happen if the sanctions are lifted, as we all hope. Yeah, I don't think that we want to see the war ongoing there in Ukraine.
The immediate risks, interesting, isn't it? Because one of the things that have been suggested is that states intervene on these ships. And, of course, that runs quite contrary to UNCLOS, the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, which which is very much part of our rules-based system, which has allowed our trade, our industry to prosper so much. The fact is these ships can trade. They don't necessarily have to have insurance if they're trading out of the Baltic, not going into territorial waters or exercising a right of free passage through a strait. Nico, from BIMCO's point of view, you have a view, I think, on this, and you agree with my definition. The parallel seat, I think, is a better way to describe it, isn't it?
Well, thank you, Mike, for saying that. It's a good advice to a panelist not to contradict too much with the moderator. So I will try also not to do that. But we at BIMCO seriously call it a parallel fleet, and that is for a reason. What we are facing in the parallel fleet is a non-IG, non-international group insurance, and a non-IACS, International Association of Classification Societies, classification. That as such, and I want to be careful, but I think it's important to say it anyway, that as such does not make the fleet dark or shadow. That makes it different. It's parallel. We have to be fair that there are new insurance groups potentially developing, that there are new classification societies potentially developing, and our industry is regulated by UNCLOS and by SOLAS. And as they fulfill that, we have to accept that, and we have to try not to be Eurocentric or in the insurance market to that extent, London-centric in a way. Now, that being said, I totally agree with Sotiris that we have to be very, very strict and very robust with those ships that trade without SOLAS and UNCLOS conform insurance coverage or classification or labor law. When we speak about the parallel fleet, we speak too little about the seamen involved. Because there may be very serious issue with union standards on these ships as well. So with those that are not playing by the rules, we have to be very strict. Also, as Sotiris said, to avoid... imagine there is a Russian ship, a Russian-insured ship, making a damage in a country where Russia has an interest. Probably they will pay. If that happens in the Baltic, will the Russian insurance pay damages? We don't know.
So we have to be very careful where the coverage is not secured according to the regulation, but the non-part of the established party as such doesn't make them bad. And the final comment, which I find very important, or BIMCO finds very important, you say it's a monster, which implies that it is big. 95% of the global fleet of the 60,000 ships are playing exactly by the rules. So we have to also mention that. It's not something that is growing, and for sure it will maybe not go away, but it will get smaller once the sanctions are over. So in a nutshell, yes, it's a very serious issue, but let's look at it with the calmness of Minister Lee yesterday.
Yes, you have very, very good perspective, wasn't it? From the registry's point of view, I mean, quite correctly, you don't sit there and say we only register vessels with who are IX or IG or whatever else. I mean, you have a that's absolutely correct. That must continue. But equally, you're under pressure from your host nation, the United States, and other governments as well. Any perspective on this? Do you think it's something that's here to stay, and this is a phenomenon, or do you think it's going to reduce after, if the US sanctions first, then perhaps the UK and the European Union follow?
So I'm going to disagree with the parallel fleet. I think that's a very good branding exercise. But if you're in the 95% that's complying, I'm not sure that you should be that concerned about labeling the 5% that might be, jeopardizing our reputation as an industry in the public sphere. So for the registry, we've invested a lot of resources, not just complying with the sanctions, but through discussions with the State Department and the OFAC list, but doing our own checks. Whether the dark fleet is here to stay, if you're trying to cripple a nation economically by removing them from the traditional system, I think it's a natural reaction for them to look for alternatives.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think maybe it's that there's a lot of sanctions at the moment, so the dark fleet is a larger size. So we would hope that if we're able to resolve some of the conflicts, then the scale of the dark fleet decreases, and therefore the risk to maritime safety and the environment will also shrink.
Interesting. Okay, we've got 2 minutes, 31 seconds left. I'm just interested. I mean, obviously, some very interesting thoughts here. If anybody has any questions from the audience, do you want to wave your hands? Otherwise, I've still got some things I want to talk to the panel about. So I don't immediately see anybody waving their hands. But if anybody does, do think about it now. So the last thing then, really, we've got a very short period of time to think really about Iran. And the way I'm going to phrase this, any concerns, and I say that, I put this into context. At the height of Trump-era sanctions last time, we had, I think, about 300,000 barrels per day coming out of Iran. That was the impact of his last maximum pressure campaign. Today, I suspect that's probably about 1.5 million tons, and that is finding its way onto some of our ships, ships we insure. Unbeknown, responsible ship owners are finding that. Is this of concern? Any thoughts on how Trump 2.0 and Iran might shape up? Maybe a very, very quick comment from each of you. You're nodding, Matt, so I'm going to pick on you.
This is the question that you gave to me to prepare for. So, I think the American policy on Iran has been fairly consistent throughout the different administrations. So basically sanctions and military deterrence in terms of curbing Iran's influence in the region. I think you have to ask yourself, what is the priority? Where does it stand in foreign policy priorities for the United States, given two factors? One, the U.S. being a net exporter of oil and gas, and second, strong domestic production dovetailing well with the Trump administration's policy of reindustrialization, particularly for economic and national security interests. In terms of the impact on shipping, I think conventional wisdom is if there were to be a deal with Iran, you'd have increased oil production, so lower oil prices, maybe increased tanker demand. reopening of the Red Sea, if you subscribe to the, also the conventional wisdom that there's a link between Iran and the Houthis, and then also to the last point is reduction in dark fleet. So very concerned. It's obviously a hot area, but as with everything, would be good if we can find a resolution and take it off the list of geopolitics panels.
Time is up. 1 second, but any very quick closing comments, Nico Sotiris?
Thank you very much. I think the pressure on Iran is good. They deny to have a nuclear program. Probably anybody who believes that also believes in Santa Claus. And I would think keeping the pressure on is good advice.
Sotiris?
Not a comment on Iran, but I would like to close.
Yes, go ahead.
By saying that since our debate is about the geopolitics, we shouldn't forget about the energy transition.
Yes.
It's part of the shift we have seen in our industry, and we are following closely. And we are really hopeful that the IMO will deliver meaningful measures next month to implement a very ambitious greenhouse gas reduction strategy.
Yeah, let's hope so. Look, ladies and gentlemen, fascinating. This is probably the first opportunity to sort of unpick these issues following a lot of what's been going on in the world. So I'm really grateful to all of you for your insight. The panel, please, ladies and gentlemen.